Hello everyone, welcome to the NRF1 podcast, Norfolk's premier Formula One podcast in Norfolk. And globally, we are big globally, I've said it. We're on Acast, iTunes, and of course now on Future Radio in Norwich. We all hope this finds you well and recovered from an epic Monaco Grand Prix. We are being treated to some fantastic action this season. Forget all the squabbles, all the negativity. It's all about the racing. And what a load of racing we're getting. My name is Michael Bailey. I'm with the bumper panel this afternoon. So we'll see how much we can cram in. We've got Richard Baxter, David Tillier, Perry Hamilton and Kyle Cumbers all here to talk through the action in Monte Carlo. Cracking stuff. How is everyone? Everyone all right? Who wants to go first? Are we all well? All well? What have we been up to? Rich?
Good. I've been eating egg and bacon for breakfast, so can't go wrong with that.
Rub it in.
The same, actually, yeah. So
you've been having egg and bacon as well? What, the same place?
No.
Which eggs?
Boiled.
Fried.
Oh!
I was going to say chicken, then I suddenly realised what you meant.
Yeah, no, you could have said that would have worked. I'd have liked that.
I had a fried egg for breakfast as well, but no bacon, unfortunately.
Oh, dear Lord. What did I have? Crunchy nut cornflakes?
I had watermelon.
Oh, bed! Listen to that.
I genuinely had watermelon.
Body's a temple. I tell you what else is a temple. The Monaco Grand Prix. It's a temple of Formula One action, and what a race we had. Lewis Hamilton winning the 44th win of his career, which is fitting because, of course, that's his number. Mercedes' 50th win as a constructor. And this is it, isn't it? This is what we've been waiting for. He's back in the game. Game on, Lewis.
I think more than game on Lewis, what we've been waiting for is that level of competition at the front of the field. We've now had been treated to it two races in a row. But obviously in Spain, it was because they clattered into each other and took each other off the track. But what we're actually looking for now is, I mean, will it continue outside of the strict confines of a tricky Monaco circuit? Probably not. But we got a little bit of competition that wasn't just between Lewis and Nico. But yeah, it's great to see Lewis back up front because it does make the championship run that much more enjoyable.
And it means that I don't have to keep asking the same question at the start of every podcast, which is Nico going to win it? Does anyone think Nico's going to win it? We'll maybe come on to Nico later, but Lewis.
What a drive. It was a brilliant drive from him. I'm pleased because he deserved it, especially having more trouble in qualifying, which is kind of becoming almost the norm now for him, unfortunately.
He did well to keep it together, didn't he, really? Because that must have been mortifying what happened there.
Yeah.
The engine just, what was it, fuel pressure, I think, and that was it. And he didn't get out of the pits for Q3.
Yeah, he kind of managed to get out for the last five laps. And you could see him kind of doing, you know, 5 minutes or whatever it was, I don't know how long. But he was winding himself up doing lap after lap. And then he just suddenly thought, right, I'm going to take one shot. And, I mean, it wasn't as good as possibly could have been. But to get third on the grid, at least you're up the, you know, the right end of the field rather than being 10th or something and having the chance of being wiped out at the first corner.
And I thought they hadn't really corrected the problem because he seemed to be on the track doing two or three laps, didn't he, at the end of Q3, not going particularly quickly. And like, oh, this isn't going to happen. And then bang, he, you know, and it was such commitment. It was a great qualifying session, but such commitment from him in that, which of course then carried on into the race.
Yeah, because I think after the second sector, he was actually up on Ricciardo's time. I think it was possibly the few laps he'd done on the tyres. Unfortunately, the last sector, it went away from him. But
am I right in saying that those ultra softs, because I assume he set his pole on the ultra softs, they need about three laps to switch them on at Monaco. So that's why they run the three laps. They need to get the heat cycle into them. Otherwise, they just don't have the grip. So that's why they did.
They do, yeah. But he did more than just year three. I mean, he did quite a few. He would gear up for it. It almost felt like he was, you know, when you're doing a computer game. And you're like, right, I've got to go for my flying lap. And you hit one corner wrong and you're just like, right, I'll reset that.
Yeah.
Right, hit start, reset. And I think with Lewis, he probably had a couple of things that he knew weren't perfect in his first sector, maybe at the beginning of his second sector. And he sacked off the couple of laps. Didn't think, well, I'll go for it and try and make that time up later in the lap. Because he knows once those ultra softs are on, they go off just as quickly. Well, or so we thought. So, yeah, I think he just was waiting for that perfect storm. And as I think Richie just quite rightly said, he just then thought, do you know what? I've got to go for it now because I've dallied around too much. So,
if Lewis's first win of the season, his first win since Austin?
Yeah,
last year. It'd all been Rosberg since then. First win since he became a three-time world champion. And it's only his second win at Monaco, which, of course, off the back of what happened last year around Monte Carlo, was a major thing for him too. You could sense it, couldn't you? Just how beaming he was at everything that happened.
Yeah, I think it's just the relief. He was gutted last year. I mean, we saw obviously when he drove into the number three or third plate.
Yes, the vine is still on the Twitter feed.
Yeah. I was kind of hoping he'd do it for the first place as well, but like his arms in the air. But yeah, I think it's just that gets his season back. I mean, he destroyed Rosberg. We'll talk about him later. But and it was just good to see two drivers at the front just absolutely on it. And like any moment there could have been a mistake and they could have ended up on the wall. But for pressure for what, 45 laps, he's ahead of Ricciardo in them conditions. It was a good drive.
Yeah, it was a very good drive. And the conditions were crazy. As happy as Lewis was, we had Daniel Ricciardo, who came second from pole, of course. I mean, Lewis was obviously gutted this time last year. I think Daniel was a new level of gutted. Where did it all go wrong? The pit stop, clearly. Ahead, comfortably ahead. 13-second pit stop because the team didn't have any tyres out, let alone the right ones.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not quite sure how they managed to make that mistake. There was nothing in the post-race sort of stuff that I watched on Channel 4 that kind of explained, or the team didn't come out and explain what happened. I think they were just trying to avoid the media as best they could. But yeah, you could. There is no shadow of a doubt, I think, that Ricciardo would have won the race if it wasn't for that disastrous pit stop, because he'd done a pretty good in-lap from what I could see, compared to the lap that Lewis was doing at the time, and he would have come out comfortably ahead because it was close when they did come out. He was only just behind Lewis at that point. So how they managed it was just, you know, in terms of F1 cock-ups, it's got to be sort of right up there, hasn't it?
And further to your point though, DT, even if and I do believe if Ricciardo had come out ahead of Hamilton, we wouldn't have seen the same battle that we saw with Hamilton being ahead of Ricciardo. Ricciardo was so much faster.
Yeah.
So much faster than him. He would have scampered off into the distance and he would have held that lead. Yeah. And Lewis would have been left just trying to catch him up and hope that Ricciardo would have put a foot wrong or been held up by traffic.
Yeah, I also think that I don't think Ricciardo would have munched his front tyres in the same way, because obviously he was frustrated, so he was trying too hard at Hamilton. Therefore, he sort of damaged his front tyres. If he was ahead, he would have just romped away and extended that lead. Okay. So yeah, definitely agree with Ped on that one.
Alan McNish said that you have either two sets. You make sure you have two sets of tyres out if you're not sure which ones you're going to use. You don't have none. So that when he comes out, of course. Helmut Marko actually apologised to Ricciardo and his family, I think, which apparently him apologising just doesn't happen. So I think that perhaps said the gravity of how Red Bull felt about it. And Ricciardo kind of carried himself quite well in the press afterwards. And he was clearly distraught and didn't really want to talk about it. He was proper pissed off. Yeah, didn't really slap. Did he? Did he say too much? Is the team going to go, oh, come on, he's up?
No, I think, you know, he said he was, I can't remember the exact word, but he was basically stolen the lead or the win of the race again or something like that.
Screwed over.
Screwed, that was it, yeah. Screwed. That's the word, yeah. I knew it began with an S, I can't remember. But, but yeah, he said that and you have sympathy for him and you think it was really nice for him to get pole position because, of course, Bianchi 2 years ago got points there for Marussia and, of course, they were good friends. You know, Ricciardo and Bianchi, and you know, it's quite nice to see him get pole position and be grinning. It's a shame, kind of, it being almost quite a romance if he'd won, quite fitting. But to be honest, I'm a Hamilton fan, I'm not too disappointed.
Also, Ricciardo's first pole.
His first pole,
his
and
first ever pole. Sorry, Michael, am I stepping on your toes? What we're going to talk about later?
No, not at all. No, it was next on my list, but I'm glad you said
his first ever pole. And you always think that if because someone's won a race, in my head, if you've won a race, you've probably had a pole position before, because you know a pole position, you've just got to do one good lap. To win a race, you've got to do all the laps pretty good, haven't you? Mm. So I was really when the commentators were saying, "Oh, his first pole position," I thought first pole position around Monaco. No. His first pole position in a Formula One car. And for a driver of his skill and race-winning ability, that was, I thought, well done you. I mean, it's something that he can take away from the weekend. It's probably small comfort to him now. But, you know, you think, crikey, you know, you've actually done really, really well there.
Well, you can look at Lewis and, you know that 12 months is a long time and hopefully he'll get another shot. Not only was it Daniel's first pole, it was the first Renault pole of the hybrid era, which kind of says a lot in terms... And notice how they call it a Renault now, not the watch engine. Yeah, that. And obviously they've signed a deal and everything's really rosy now between Renault and Red Bull and Toro Rosso, which is obviously wonderful stuff. Hamilton's defending of his lead against Ricciardo got a bit close at one point, but you were happy with that, were you, Carl?
I thought he probably should have given Ricciardo the lead. I hate when people... Yeah. I mean, it was a little bit... Because it was wet, so there's a little bit of room for manoeuvre, should we say. But, yeah, I don't like when people outbreak themselves and go over the car park area and carry on. But
And then kind of close the door on him afterwards as well, didn't
he? Yeah, I thought that was all right.
Yeah.
But I thought there was enough space.
I ran Monaco.
Yeah, so maybe, I mean, if they'd done it again, then I think the stewards should have definitely come and said, sorry, Lewis, you got to move back. But Lewis done the right thing. He said, well, he kept his place and said, well, I'll let the stewards deal with it. And then,
the thing is, the conditions, people were making mistakes left, right and centre, and it wasn't a big mistake. So I think as a one-off thing, I don't think there's any argument you could give to say that he should have moved over and given the place, because he didn't gain anything from it.
But then look at that from the other point of view. From what I remember of where Ricciardo was positioning his car, would he have given Hamilton a car's width between the apex? You can't hit that chicane as the man on the inside of the corner and pull so
Nico would probably, given what he did in Barcelona.
but you can't pull so far across to the left that you leave that car's width on the apex of the corner. You're going to be driving into a barrier. So Lewis had no choice. If anything, you could argue Lewis had to go to keep his car in one piece and to avoid the collision. So there's nothing wrong. He was ahead, he held his position, and then he defended. I think he defended aggressively, but I do think he defended fairly.
I think there was still enough space there. If Ricciardo really wanted to come through and he kept his foot in it, Hamilton, you know, would have had the choice, either we crash, we're both out, or I have to move over and have another go. You know, if Ricciardo was at the turn, I think he could have really just kept his foot in it. But you know, he's defended well. Don't start waving your hand in the air, just get on with it.
He was
play to the whistle, get it done, finish it hard.
It was great racing between the pair of them. As I said, I mean, clearly with Ricciardo, what happened in Spain, and he still felt a bit aggrieved at what happened with Max Verstappen. It's maybe understandable that this was sort of a bridge too far. He was very sweary all weekend, though, wasn't he, Daniel Ricciardo? All the time on the radio, he was sweary. He was giving the finger to Kimi Raikkonen in practice because he was going too slow, and then called him a better make sure I bleep that one. Yeah. Hey, if the team radio can, then yeah, there you go. That's the joy.
Well, he is Australian, so you know, it's to be expected.
Yeah, slag off a nation. Let's do that.
I did love one of the things. I don't know if we'll talk about qualifying a bit later. One of the things I absolutely loved was he said, this is what I like about Daniel Ricciardo. I have a lot of time for him. And you've mentioned, Michael, very, just to quickly go off on a side tangent, you said the way he dealt with himself when he was dealing with the press. Professional, I think, is the word that describes him there for me. And I was talking about this with my friend who I was watching the race with. He said negative things, but he said them in a very respectful way. He didn't burn bridges. He didn't point fingers. He said, this is what it is, but we've got to move on. We've got to get going. And he holds himself in a very, very respectful, professional way. And what I liked is he's the kind of guy who, when he says he'll do something, he will do it. And I think it was Ted Kravitz, or it was either Kravitz or Crofty, who said it on the Sky commentary. And they said, I was talking to Ricciardo last night, and he said, you know, I'm either going to put it on first, or I'm going to put it in the fifth row of the stands, because I'm going to go that hard. And what a lap he did. I mean, that quali lap was amazing.
He did, absolutely. And the thing I like that we've seen in Daniel in the last few weeks, certainly probably since Max arrived, you've just seen the edge and the steel that's got him to where he is. He's normally, you think, oh, he's so smiley, you know, and how did he get where he is? And you're just seeing that edge. Now, of course, it's a question now as to whether that's because he's under pressure and he starts to really crack under it, but there's no sign of that. None of it has been because of his issues. He looks like a man on it. And you'd have to say, we'll maybe get back onto Red Bull in a little bit, but they are quick, and that engine looks handy with its little upgrade. We've got a big elephant in the room that we haven't addressed yet. I'm waving to him. He's German. And he's Nico Rosberg. This is Nico Rosberg, the elephant. There's a pun there somewhere, isn't there? Possibly.
Nico the elephant, back to his trunk. I'm not
going
to finish.
I can't believe you didn't keep going. Jumbo. No, anyway. Nico Rosberg is not an elephant. He's a racing driver. He held everyone up pretty much all weekend, certainly on the race. He had to let... Let's just get this right. He had to let Lewis Hamilton through... effectively, because he was so slow, he had to let through his key rival for the championship because Nico couldn't do it. And then obviously Lewis went on and won the race. He pretty much always had a queue behind him. He didn't stop on his marks for the pit stop, which held him up on lap 21, and then he ballsed it up at the line when Nico Hülkenberg overtook him. That was the difference between 6th and 7th. That's the difference between 8 points and 6 points. And now, rather than being 26 points ahead of Lewis, he's 24 points, which is the difference between one race win and not a race win. I mean, to me, everything there summed up exactly why most people would prefer Lewis as a racing driver. Yep.
Look, imagine it like this. Lewis Hamilton wins a world championship driving a Mercedes. It's because Lewis is a world-class racing driver and a multiple-time world champion, and he's one of the best people on the track. Nico Rosberg wins a world championship driving a Mercedes. It's because he's in the right car. That's what people will say. That you could, and I do genuinely believe, you say you plugged, we just sung his praises, Ricciardo. You take Daniel Ricciardo, you plug him into that Merc, he'll win races. Could he win a championship? He's got as much chance as Nico Rosberg has. Put Rosberg in a different car, you don't see the same level of wins that you're seeing out of the moment. He is a product of that car. That, for me, sums up the general opinion about Rosberg whenever I go out and talk about him to people, which does happen occasionally.
He's won the last three Monaco Grand Prix. The guy should have been flying around here. I've just thought it was a disgrace, I've got to be honest.
Yeah, for me, for a while, it was like watching Jarno Trulli.
Yes!
Norfolk favourite, Jarno Trulli.
Absolutely. But it was a strange one. He just didn't... I mean, he was pretty quick in qualifying and practice. But in the race, I just think he wasn't comfortable with the conditions. And, of course, Monaco in the wet is probably something to be feared quite heavily, because if you make a mistake, there's no runoff really for you. There's a wall. But, he just never seemed really on it. And credit to him for letting Hamilton pass, because he could have said, no, I'm not going to let him.
Yeah, we'll get into that later as well. So,
you know, he could have put his foot down. But to be honest, it shows the big steps I think Mercedes have taken as well to get their drivers respecting them. Because previously, I think the drivers have said, nah, not happening. But then suddenly, this weekend, probably the first time since Ross Brawn was there, we've seen them make a call and they've kind of followed it through.
What happened in Barcelona will have helped that.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, last time you went at it hammer and tongs and look what happened. This time you listen to us, especially on as somewhere where you've got no runoff and, you know, you're looking at concrete and steel.
Yeah. And Rosberg, obviously, he apologised, didn't he, I think publicly, for effectively it being his fault. He sort of put the blame at his door more than Hamilton's, I think, after the aftermath of the race. So, I mean, personally, I think Rosberg had a mare of a race. He was slow. He just didn't seem to have that spark that he has had in the past. And I agree that I don't think he is a world-class driver in Hamilton's league, but I still think he's definitely in the upper echelons speed-wise. He just doesn't have that extra spark that makes a Hamilton or a Senna, you know, or a Schumacher or what have you. But I have to take my hat off to him for actually going, you know, with the team, and the Sauber drivers showed a perfect example of what can happen if you ignore team orders.
We'll get to that.
But yeah, so the fact that he actually obeyed the team and did what he was asked of him was, you know, quite impressive.
I think he probably was a little bit embarrassed by his pace early on. I mean, Ricciardo was just pulling 2 seconds a lap on him. And like I say, as he's going up the hill, you can see this train of cars behind him.
It's the rest of the grid.
And also, even on, I think it's Thursday morning in free practice, they said the first half an hour, I think, just pretty much the Mercedes were out by themselves, and Hamilton was lapping like 2 seconds a lap quicker. And I think that's just a statement from early on. So I'm on the bus around here. And even, you look back to last year, the only reason Hamilton came in was because he was 20 seconds ahead of him.
He almost lapped him as well by the end.
He almost lapped him yesterday.
And he got overtaken in the last like 200 metres of the start of finish straight. I mean, that's got to be a real kick in the teeth, isn't it?
You'll have to deal with that bit, definitely. Right, you're listening to the NRF1 podcast on Acast and on Future Radio. It's time for the NRF1 Pit Stops. Okay, we've touched on Mr. Ricciardo. We should stop off at Red Bull because we've got to deal with Max Verstappen, race winner in Spain. Didn't quite go quite as well, did it this time, which some of us called in the predictions. Three big smashes. He had some great overtakes. I mean, we kind of saw everything. To me, I've been thinking about this. Like, Max and close walls equals an accident waiting to happen. He's like the new breed of driver, isn't he? Where if you give him all the space in the world, he can push it to the limit and he'll be absolutely fine. But as soon as you put him in a kind of old school environment, straight in the wall. And he did it three times. I mean, a lot. It was a lot of damage, a lot of money.
Yeah, but I have a feeling that in 2 or 3 years' time, you know, once he's kind of got this out of his system, I reckon he will be monstrous around Monaco. I think he's going to be pretty quick. And up until the point where he crashed, just before that, I was honestly thinking he's probably going to end up being my driver of the day, because he was monstrously fast. He did more, you know, much better overtaking than anyone else, I think, on the track at the time, and was just, it was an epic drive. Unfortunately, he just let it down by, and even then, the crash wasn't really, it was, you know, it wasn't a massive mistake. He wasn't being stupid. It's just Monaco, and one of those things where, you know, if you just get it just wrong and you hit a bump, you're going to end up in the barrier.
We should touch on that because Sebastian Vettel made exactly the same mistake. It's just that later on, but the track was drier So he just about managed to catch it, which is probably the only difference. And he's a four-time world champion making that mistake. So maybe we should go a little bit easier on Max. But certainly good signs for him still, I think, in the long run. And certainly the pace of the Red Bull watch engine. Ferrari, then, in terms of Seb, I mean, well, and Ferrari in general. I mean, Kimi Raikkonen going rogue, trying to drive his front wing under his car was brilliant.
Kimi was driving literally just to where he could park so he could get onto his yacht. You notice where he parked that car? Notice where he parked that car right after the seafront chicane before you get to the swimming pool? Where all the yachts are.
Do you think there's a GoPro footage where it's on his back and he runs, gets straight out of his car, runs straight towards the harbour and then just jumps in?
I wouldn't be surprised if he went just to his yacht.
So a pretty torrid weekend for Ferrari, and this is all adding up now to a team that's not going to win a title again this year, isn't it, Rich?
Yeah, it's quite shocking almost that they've been beaten twice by Red Bull the last two races now. Because at the start of the season, everyone was back in Ferrari saying, you know, they've got a real good chance of catching Mercedes. But to be honest, their car seems to have almost gotten worse. Because we've seen them on the podium. I mean, okay, there's been a bit of bad luck with their drivers getting hit a couple of times, especially Vettel with Kvyat, which you've seen. But, I mean,
can we play the radio clip again? No, we won't.
Raikkonen was second in the championship, driver's championship. He's now gone down to fourth. And Ricciardo and Hamilton have both jumped him in that one race. So, I mean,
but wouldn't you argue that Raikkonen's almost overachieving by being second in the championship at that point? I mean, he's got no right to be there, has he? If anyone said to you after, you know, coming into race six, Raikkonen would be second in the championship, you go, well, I thought Ferrari would be making strides, but it wouldn't be Kimi that would be up there. You know, he's overachieved just to be there in the first place.
It's more of a sad indictment to what kind of a season Seb's having, which is pretty much a nightmare, really. I mean, even considering his last year at Red Bull, I would say it's 15 years since Ferrari won around the streets of Monte Carlo. 15 years.
I think Alonso made some comments at the weekend, sort of saying Ferrari will always get close but never be quick enough or dominant enough. And you kind of think maybe that's quite a true statement. And maybe it is the reason why he went to McLaren Honda, but yeah, that may not work out either. But yeah, that's maybe a true statement. They'll always get there near enough, but just can't get over the line.
We can touch on maybe Ron Dennis in our next podcast, because I think we did last week as well. And obviously, have a listen to our old podcast as we go through the latest news, big plans for McLaren. Should we touch on McLaren now? I wasn't going to, but you mentioned Fernando Alonso. I mean, they finished fifth, double points finish for McLaren. Is it just an anomaly? A Monaco anomaly?
I'm not even going to try and continue that on. No one needs to hear me sing. McLaren, I think they... Obviously, Monaco is great for sort of equalising out the teams a little bit, and, you know, cars that aren't quite so quick, don't have quite the same sort of horsepower, can kind of come and, with the right drivers, can actually achieve something quite good. I think Alonso and Button sort of showed that today. Button a little bit less so. I think he was a bit more unfortunate with the strategies and stuff, and Alonso capitalised on that. But yeah, very respectable result, and good to see.
Big ones to keep an eye on.
They both gained four places in the race, so they kind of did quite an equal job, really, in terms of that. And it was good to see him get points, and I think it suits their car being quite high downforce but not necessarily high power.
Well, Cedric.
And they both drove really well. Let's give them that. You know, take away the car, you know what you're getting with both JB and Alonso. You know that they are great, and especially around Monaco, they're very controlled.
Experience, isn't it? That's
absolutely that. I've seen that. And your point you made about Max Verstappen is that, you know, or it might have been yourself, Michael. You said that they come through from where if they make a mistake, there's no comeback for them. You know, there's wide open runoff areas. And you said that in a couple of years will be a beast. I think it's a combination of the two. These drivers that are coming through now, they have no fear, because they've never had that fear of putting a foot wrong, skidding through gravel and smashing into a barrier that's only 2 feet away from the track. So they have that no fear. So all you need to do is just put them around a track like Monaco, or a track like, you know, in Australia, on those street circuits, or even Singapore, that's the night race, isn't it?
And we've got Baku coming up as well.
So, you know, put them in those, give them a few years getting used to that. They'll have that no fear that they bring with them. But as you say, Michael, there's no substitute for experience.
Force India, what a race for them. Nico Hülkenberg did brilliantly to pip Nico Rosberg, of course, but Sergio Perez finished third. It was his call in terms of the tyres and picking up slicks rather than going on to the intermediates. Have I got that right? I think that was the way he did it?
I don't know. I've got no idea.
I can't remember which way he did it, but it definitely hit his tyre call and he got it right. And the celebrations from him in the cockpit for finishing third. And, you know, he has a pretty good record, Sergio. You forget that he was in at McLaren maybe at a time when McLaren was struggling.
Force India have four podium finishes in the history of the team. Sergio Perez has three of them. Three of them. He's easily their most successful driver they've ever had. 5 points if you can tell me who had the other one.
Fisichella.
Yeah.
Boom. Spa. 5 points.
2009.
Now you're just showing off. But you don't get any points. Can we just clarify that? No extra actual points. But brownie points. Get brownie points.
I mean, how incredible is that? You know, you look at... You always look at... I know on the pod, we have a sort of love-hate relationship with Force India. At the beginning of every season, we love them and we say, this is the year they're going to make that jump. They're going to take Williams. They're going to do this. And then by halfway through the season, we're always there going, expected more from Force India. Their driver lineup's average. You know, they're not this. They don't set the world on fire. And that it's the old adage of, well, Perez can make his tyres last. That's what's good about him. But actually, he was on softs. If you can't make soft tyres last around Monaco, you've got no business being in a Formula One car.
And I mean, we often talk about Nico Hülkenberg, but... It is Sergio Perez, isn't it?
Yeah, no podiums for Hülkenberg in his career. And Perez is always, whenever there's opportunities for a podium, he's always there. Lazy all the years ago when he's at Sauber, and he just takes opportunities. And he's probably time, maybe McLaren was too early for him when they were on the downward slope, but you kind of think like maybe Ferrari or something like that. He does deserve a go. And he's still very young, isn't he? So,
and if you remember, he came through the Ferrari Young Driver Programme, so he could be in with a shout there if they do replace Raikkonen.
Yeah, maybe. And I think with Perez as well, the thing he's great at is his strategy. He always, most of these podiums seems to come from really good strategy calls and just doing really solid race rather than being out and out ballistically fast, which in Formula One is a big part of being a great driver, I think.
I think the conditions suit Perez as well, because with Malaysia in 2012, that was a drying track, and he just went offline as he was just happened to be following a Ferrari, who were kind of the parent team at that time. But, he's obviously got the skill and the drying conditions on the track. So he's obviously got something up his sleeve there.
You can hear in the background, the gents...
Jean Alesi. That was always Jean Alesi's thing, wasn't it? Jean Alesi was fantastic on a track that had been wet and was drying out. Anyone remember that about Jean? Yeah, that was his thing, wasn't he? So there you go. Damn. Perez, the new Jean Alesi.
And Jensen. Always had it. You could hear in the background there, the gents just tucking on some Jaffa cakes, which is absolutely why they're here. You can see more of that on our Facebook page, because we did a live video. We're going to try and do a bit more of that. Facebook.com/NRF1podcast. You can see all our faces. What more could you want? Probably less faces. Let's touch in on... let's rattle through these. He says again, Sauber, there's so much to get through. Sergio Perez's old team. Brilliant. This was hilarious. Basically, you had Felipe Nasr being told to let Marcus Ericsson through. He was on a different strategy, let the guy through. Nasr was like, no, you're right, thanks. They said, no, it's coming from the top. You've got to let him through. Marcus is like, why is he not letting me through? Nasr's like, no, I'm not letting you through. 7 laps later, Marcus is like, well, sod this for Game of Soldiers. They get to Raskas, I think. There's a...
That well-known passing opportunity on the streets of Monaco, Raskas. Yeah, sure.
I mean, Nasr sort of looked like he was half leaving Marcus a space for about 4 corners. And eventually, Marcus went, well, that's about another half a space. I'm going for it. Straight down, took both cars out. Amazing.
And Ericsson looked like he outbraked himself a bit as well, rather than didn't necessarily look like a lunge. It just looked like, oh, I've got to go for it now, because I'm there.
David Coulthard mentioned that Manisha Kaltenbaum, the smoke coming from one of the cars was actually Monica in the car, being very annoyed. She said it won't happen again. Both drivers have been told off, although in Felipe Nasr's quotes, it was more like, oh, I don't really know what happened, but I'm sure it won't happen again.
Coulthard said it was like a petrol bomb that she chucked in. Yeah. I thought, that's a little bit harsh.
A little bit harsh, but I mean, what do... Yeah, come on.
At least they got a bit of TV coverage. I mean, they're looking for sponsors, so...
Well, this is a team we didn't mention at the start of the season, because they were so dull. And now, we can't wait to see what they do in the next race.
They haven't really featured in any race so far this season, apart from this one. So, yeah, well, I suppose that's got to be some kind of progress, really.
Brundle hit it on the head in his commentary, which I think is a very, very interesting point, and I think is a topic for a larger conversation another time. But what are you going to do with these guys? You're going to sit them? What are you going to do? You're going to pull their drive? You can't. they pay you. If they didn't pay you, you wouldn't have a team. So it's kind of like the tail wagging the dog in that respect, isn't it? I mean, as I say, conversation for another time, but how do you discipline that? I mean, someone like, we talked about it before, I remember going all the way back to Multi 21. You know, how do you deal with Seb after that, after, you know, being told by from the very top to get out of the way or to not, you know, not overtake, as it were, and him going ahead and doing it? I remember saying at the time, you suspend him for a race because no one is bigger than the team. Well, unfortunately, these guys are bigger than the team, or at least their bank accounts are. Yeah. And it's a worry.
I wonder which one brings in more money out of the pair. I know Marcus Ericsson has a very big budget, but it could simply come down to that at the end of the day, which is obviously a great way to decide things.
Guido van der Gaard, where's he? Get him back in.
Yeah, we'd probably do it for free.
I reckon it's probably NASA's probably got the bigger bank account out of the two. I don't know. I just, for some reason, Sweden just doesn't shout like billionaire oil.
I don't know, mate. If you ever tried to pay for a cocktail there, you need to take out a second mortgage.
Really? High taxes. That's all I'm saying. High taxes.
You mentioned Van der Gaard. He did put a tweet out. I can't remember exactly what it is, but I'm gonna search it.
Go for it.
So Guido van der Gaard said, "Terrible communication at Sauber. In other news, water is wet."
Will we tweet that? That's amazing. Oh, good old Guido. Well worth the payoff that was. Toro Rosso. The only thing to touch on here is Daniel Kvyat. I mean, bless him. You want a reaction. When something goes wrong, you just want to see that reaction. And so far, he had a bit of a nightmare in Spain, and then he just drove into Kevin Magnussen when he still couldn't get his car working at the start either.
You do feel sorry for him. Was it on the radio, he said, "Why always me?" or something along those lines. And you think, when he's
come on Mario Balotelli on us, oh no.
I felt sorry for him until then. At which point I just thought, you are one of the top 22 drivers in the world. You are jetted around. You get in a car. You drive fast. You get paid to do what you love. Man up. Get back on the track. Get your head up and start doing some driving. Because we know he can drive.
Just drive into Kevin Magnussen.
Because we all thought he's quick. He just seems to, his career sort of stalled. And Sainz is, I mean, he's half a second slower than Sainz in qualifying. And Sainz had another good race. It's not looking good for Kvyat's Formula 1 career at the moment.
It was a big blow when he got switched for Max, and I think that's going to take a while to get back, if he gets back from a tour. Lastly, just to touch on Renault, Jolyon Palmer drove on a white line, carnage all over, straight into the wall, and Kevin Magnussen, again, signs of life from him, but ultimately he ended up in a wall as well, and it was a bit of a mess of a race for poor old Renault. Never mind. You're listening to the NRF1 with Acast with Future Radio. It's time for now our good Badoas and uglies. It's our of the weekends. Now we're going to start off with our newly renamed Rodolfo Gonzalez, driver of the weekend. I'm going to name it after Rodolfo because he's a top man. Brought up in Attleboro, even though he's Venezuelan. Brought up in Attleboro, raced for Caterham a little bit, didn't he? Straight out of Hingham. Might have even been Lotus, Team Lotus at that point. I can't really remember, but he's a good man, and we used to write loads of stories for him all the way through his racing development through Norfolk. He'd always like drop off a little present at the end of the year, big bouquet of flowers, once a orange liqueur. Yeah, so there you go. That's what it takes to get your name on an award.
We've got a bit of a Venezuela theme, haven't we, this bit? Because obviously we've got pasta of the weekend as well, so it's maybe some sponsorship coming our way.
Yeah, we need some of that money from the Venezuelan oil oligarchs.
I was in the mech of a garage actually when he was racing LMP2 in the European Mall. I didn't realise he was such a local boy at the time. Didn't have a great race at the time, so
yeah, well,
the mood for a chat.
We love Rodolfo, let's leave it there. So who is our Rodolfo of the weekend? That's a good thing.
Of the whole weekend, I'd like to give it to Ricardo. Because that pole position lap was mighty. I mean, it was beyond words.
And nothing he did in the race.
Nothing he did was wrong. Everything he did was right. And it's just a little sour that it didn't come off for him. But for me, it's Ricardo.
Anyone else? Other options?
Perez is obviously an option. But I think Sainz as well. I thought Sainz had a good race. So
when I finished, when the race finished, I was thinking about who I'm going to give it to. And I thought Perez. He was been very, very quick, great strategy, ended up on the podium, you know, outperformed his car probably to a degree. And I was definitely going to give it to Perez. But I think on reflection, I sort of thought, actually, no, I can't not give it to Ricardo. He was mightily fast. He had everything that he should have had was just taken from him, but like we said, by nothing he did. And throughout the race, he was just on it and just showed so much of what we want as fans from Formula One, someone who is passionate, entertaining and bloody fast.
Brilliantly put.
Yeah, I agree with those. I was also put a shout in there for Alonso. I thought he had a good weekend, qualified 9th, finished 5th in a McLaren, which last year didn't even work. I thought he had a good weekend. But also it's worth mentioning Harry Antti, who out-qualified his teammate. And he's not done that much this season, if at all. He did finish behind him, though, but kind of Saturday he did all
right. Half job there. No mention for the race winner. How about that? Team of the weekend? This, I think, I don't know for me. Well, Force India, given how well they both did.
I mean, my award is shared between Force India and McLaren, I think. Mm-hmm. I think they both, I mean, McLaren have been that bit further back down the grid compared to Force India so far this season. So I think their achievements in the race are probably fairly equal in terms of where they've finished on the grid, I think. So
I mean, I guess Mercedes, for the way they managed the front and then at least let Lewis go, possibly. Sauber?
100%, yeah. More action there than probably last year's.
Exactly.
Or maybe the year before Monaco's Grand Prix.
It's an entertainment game and Sauber got it. Pasta of the weekend. As we all know, this is the one who didn't do so well. There's a few here.
The Red Bull mechanic. Which one who didn't remember to get the tyres out?
Yeah.
Basically.
That one, fair enough.
Mine evolved throughout the race, because again I was thinking about, you know, who's going to get it. I was trying to be sort of well prepared for today, and yeah, I thought Red Bull when that happened, and then Sauber. I thought, well, you know, those, the whole team, the whole bunch, yeah. And then the award was taken by the race director, who decided that it was a good idea to show me Justin Bieber's face. as if I care.
And Lewis trying to force champagne down his neck, which is quite funny.
And then we saw more of him, which is, obviously more of a pain. But then I think it was ultimately taken by Channel 4 F1 for me, because I got home from work about half past 8, 9 o'clock last night, having not seen the race live. I went to go and watch the highlights. They weren't there. I had to wait until nearly 10:45 before they appeared on the on-demand services. And then I had to stay up till God knows what time this morning watching them. So, yeah, really disappointed.
You tweeted them to tell them, didn't you, DT?
I did. In the typical way that most of us in this modern age get our frustrations off our chest, we go to Twitter. And about 5 minutes later, it miraculously appeared. So maybe, you know, the NRF1 posse has power.
Agents of change.
Agents of change, the power to change Formula One for the better. That is the NRF1 podcast. And that is why we are on patreon.com/NRF1. That's the address, Patreon, which is patron, but with an E in there. Patreon .com/NRF1. We're on there because we want to change Formula One and bring you podcasts. I mean, it's not necessarily in that order, but we want to spread the word because we think what we do is good. So anything that you guys help pledge to us each month, we will use in a sort of advertising budget to help spread the word so that we can get more people involved, do more interviews. I've got a nice little list. Well, I say more interviews. I think we've done one every 2 years, but I've got a little list of people going to interview. I'll be able to pull that off and all that sort of stuff. So that's the place. If you enjoy doing listening to what we do and you think, like we did with the tyre strategy that we will always talk about, we can change Formula One for the better, people. If you don't like what Sauber are doing, we'll help you sort it out. Don't worry about that. Nico Rosberg, we'll sort that out too. Anyway, where was I? Is that everyone? Any other goats of the weekend?
I want an honourable mention for goat of the weekend, because I obviously, you agree with the Saubers and stuff. I mean, they're the obvious choices. Williams. Did anyone even bother to see what a Williams was doing at any point, during that race or that weekend? I mean, and they look the part as well. They've got Martini on them. You're in Monte Carlo. You're one of the longest tenured teams. You're one of the more successful teams. You've got fantastic young talent and experienced talent driving for you. You're well managed. You did nothing. You didn't even do anything that was worthwhile getting you TV time, Sauber. You did nothing. And it, apart from getting involved a little bit at the Lowe's hairpin with a Ferrari nearly running into the back of yours.
Getting hit, I think.
Yeah, you know, and Grosjean, I think, might have been around them as well. But yeah, I just, you know, Williams, you've got to start doing something. Because if you're just that bad that we're not even going to talk about you, you need to get your act together.
Why don't we have to be the stewards at start the race for allowing 7 laps behind the safety car? Just understand a few laps, but just get on with it. Get on with the race. They're good enough. They're the best drivers in the world. And, I mean, some came in for intermediates shortly afterwards. Just get on with the race. And also, for they changed on drivers' helmets. They're now allowing 1 change per year.
At one particular Grand Prix.
Yeah, I mean, there's more things to worry about in Formula 1 than what drivers' helmets are like. There's something a little bit different. If a driver wants to turn up with a weird helmet, let him turn up with a weird helmet.
In a counter to Kyle's point, now, I agree with you about the stewards, but can we just give a shout out to the marshals? The marshals at Monaco are always so on point, because you have a big clattering together in Monaco, and that needs to be cleared quick. That virtual safety car came out for a sector. You know, that was flashed up for a sector, but the marshals were there. They were on point. They knew exactly what to do. They got that car, stick the crane on it, lift it up, off you go. Track was swept. Spot on work. The marshals at Monaco always do a fantastic
and
job.
None of them fell over, and none of them failed to work out how to use a fire extinguisher.
So. Exactly. Yeah.
And the best thing about that as well, you mentioned the cranes, how hard they have to lift one of those cars. And you think, if that falls now, that's going to be like, that's the engine gone, that's everything. Like, your driver must be having a heart attack.
I've never seen marshals that are just so blasé about walking out on a Formula One track. You look at like places like China, you look at Malaysia, and they are just sort of like, they're putting a toe out, like they're dipping their toe into a freezing cold pool, and they run all hell out there, grab it and run back, dropping stuff on the way. You almost think they're stopping for a cigarette in Monaco as they get out on track. You know, just, whatever. Whatever, doesn't matter about it. You know, they're so cool with it.
You say about the cranes, actually, I think they learned the hard way recently. I haven't seen the footage, but if you guys search online, you'll think that there is footage out there of the time when they, at the classic F1 race that they had recently, they dropped a vintage, might have been McLaren. I'm not quite sure if it was.
That's expensive.
Yeah. Whatever it was like a 1970s vintage Formula One car, and they were lifting it up on a crane and it just went and smashed.
Crumbs.
Crumbs indeed. Crumbs. Yeah, that was what was left. I was going to mention, I mean, Rosberg for me, but whoever it was who dropped the sort of banner bag from someone that ended up falling on the track. There we go. Okay, and that leaves highlight. I mean, I love watching cars race around a track that clearly would never get the go-ahead now. I just think it's amazing. That is enough for me. The racing was brilliant. The changing conditions. Ricciardo's chasing of Hamilton. Monaco, baby. Loved it. Any other particular highlights? Anything more specific?
I did enjoy Johnny Herbert was interviewing on the driver's parade at the start. And he went up to Hamilton and said, well, you've been a bit grumpy this weekend. And to make anybody grumpy by calling them grumpy. And it was just a brilliant reaction by Hamilton. And then afterwards...
That's what Hat Lewis said?
He sort of, what are you calling me grumpy for? And just sort of even more grumpy. And then afterwards, Simon Laisby and Johnny Herbert went to interview him. And sort of Johnny Herbert went, oh, well done. And Hamilton just sort of pushed him away, sort of said, what are you doing here? Sort of thing.
Well, he's becoming the comedy figure, isn't he, really, Johnny Herbert?
Yeah. My highlight was Rosberg being overtaken on that on the last lap by just having that sixth place. Was it sixth place? Yeah, stolen from. So that was my highlight, because that was a little fist bump moment for me. You know, open the championship back up again.
Yeah, my highlight's a bit of a strange one, but it was actually Verstappen's crash when he hit the barrier, kind of coming around towards the swimming pool on his right hand side. Because I've played on this on Formula One games on the steering wheel and everything, so of course it's like real life.
And obviously.
You turn in
on the simulator. Time, this is
yeah. I turn in every time, and you just clip that barrier, and it pushes your fly. And I think, how the heck can you get around that corner without just catching that? And one of the future world champions, possibly one of the best drivers in the world, has done the same thing. So obviously, I'm not trying to brag, but it just made me feel.
If you were on the Monaco track at that weekend, you too would have gone onto the barrier and then ended up in the wall. I mean, that's something. Fair play, Rich.
So I'm technically just as good as Verstappen, right there.
Good work. All right then, I think we better wrap this up. It was a bumper pod, but of course, for a bumper race, so much to get through. What a joy it was. And we'll get to go through all the news and look ahead to Canada next weekend. That will come around quickly before you know it. Before then, a couple of plugs. We've got head over to the website, nrf1.uk. blog's betting tips ahead of Canada, hopefully. Carl's giving a little nod. Did okay in Monaco. Well,
good profit if the Saubers hadn't crashed into each other.
All the Sauber, all that was the Sauber's fault, yeah. Again. All that cost of entertainment and more all over at the website. You can listen to all the podcasts there. Yeah, follow us at Twitter at the NRF1. You can find the late highlights watching in real time, not knowing the results feed, which might have been quite entertaining, possibly. As I mentioned, facebook.com/NRF1podcast for the video with the Jaffa Cakes. Yeah, all great stuff. And a great lap of Ayrton Senna around Monaco too. Which was better before the race, because now you've seen all the current drivers do it. But, you know, it still stands. It's all good. And email us, if you wish, nrf1podcast@gmail.com.
Can I add a little plug?
Of course you can, DT. Fantastic.
So, if you are a bloke and you like bloke things...
Yes.
Head on over...
Yes, we're all that, yes.
Head on over to averagejoes.co.uk. It's one of the world's largest men's lifestyle websites, and I am returning as motoring writer, so you'll be able to see some of my stuff on there, including my recent review of the new Ford Edge that I went to Germany for. So I'm going to be doing bits and pieces for that. I've got a piece coming up soon as well with Pirelli and Audi from Silverstone. So that'll be up.
Yeah, that looked fun.
So yeah, so it was good fun until my passenger nearly vomited all over the dashboard.
Yay!
Obviously, my driving was just too good. So you know,
yeah, that is almost the desired effect, really, isn't it? If you're a woman who likes men's lifestyle stuff,
you can check out Average Jane's.
Yeah,
I don't know.
But are they not allowed on Average Joe's?
No, there's two separate websites run by the same people, based here in Norwich. So it's a local website, but yeah, there's averagejoes.co.uk, and then there's Average Jane's. You might have to search Google that, because I'm not quite sure the exact web address for Average Jane's.
But there's not like a thing at the start where it says, are you male or female? And if you go, I'm female, because you can't come here.
No, there is a link at the bottom that you can click on, which links you through to each website from the other one. So yeah, but I'm fairly sure that the majority of our demographic is probably not...
What, DT?
A lady.
I hope this is wrong. Come on, ladies, get in touch. Yeah.
Prove me wrong.
Let's hope so.
DT, never challenge the female population to prove you wrong. You're about to be crucified, my friend.
As long as it happens on Twitter or the Facebook page and we get a proper look at it, then it's fine. That is all the plugs. I mentioned the Patreon page. Don't need to do that again. Canada preview, prediction, league update. And all that exciting stuff to come next week, probably at some point after the start of the week, I suspect. But what a big thank you to Richard Baxter, David Tillier, Perry Hamilton and Kyle Cumbers. My name is Michael Bailey. This has been the NRF1 podcast, looking back at a wonderful Monaco Grand Prix. The only sad thing really is that we have to wait another 12 months before we get to do it all over again. Fortunately, we've got some races in between. Canada next. Join us for that one in all the usual places. Until then, bye for now.